The Brahmin community there was composed of pure devotees. They regularly studied a book entitled Krishna Karnamrita, which was composed by Bilva Mangala Thakur. Purport, this book was composed by Bilva Mangala Thakur in 112 verses. There are two or three other books bearing the same name, and there are also two commentaries on Bilva Mangala's book. One commentary was written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and the other by Chaitanya Das Goswami. Krishna Karnamrita Suni Prabhurananda Haila Agraha Kariya Punti Lekanya Laila. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to hear the book Krishna Karnamrita, and with great eagerness he had it copied and took it with him. Many of you must have been here yesterday for the amazing class given by Keshava Swami. I was really upset because that's one of my favorite topics, is Bilva Mangala Thakur, but he pretty much covered it. But he covered it really wonderfully, so what can I say? But here, Sri Chaitanya, he was very pleased to hear it, and he copied it and took it with him, so you knew just from that response that the book was totally wonderful and authorized. So, translation, our next verse. Karnamrita samavastu nahi tribhuvane yat yaha vaite haya krishne shuddha prema jnane. There is no comparison to the Krishna Karnamrita within the three worlds. So this is mentioned by the commentator on the book, Krishnadas Kaviraj. By studying this book, one is elevated to the knowledge of pure devotional service to Krishna. One who constantly reads the Krishna Karnamrita can fully understand the beauty and melodious taste of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. The Brahma Sanghita and Krishna Karnamrita were two books that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered to be most valuable jewels. Therefore, he took them with him on his return trip. Text 310. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next arrived at the banks of the river Tapi. After bathing there, he went to Mahishmati Pura. While there, he saw many holy places on the banks of the river Narmada. Purport, the river Tapi is also known as Tapti. The river's source is a mountain called Muktai, and the river flows westward through the state of Saurashtra and into the Arabian Sea. Mahishmati Pura, Maheshwara, is mentioned in the Mahabharata in connection with Sahadeva's victory. Sahadeva, the youngest brother of the Pandavas, conquered that part of the country. As stated in the Mahabharata, Tato Ratnan Yupadhaya Purim Maheshmatim Yayo Tatra Nilena Hagya Sachakra Yudham Narashabha. After acquiring jewels, Sahadev went to the city of Mahishmati, where he fought with a king called Nila. When I saw this verse and purport, I thought, how am I going to speak about this? First of all, I couldn't find much reference to this particular incident of Sahadev conquering a king called Nila. So I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to speak for more than a few minutes on something like that, or if at all. So then I thought, well, what else happened today? So, what's that? Yes. So it is, of course, the season of Kartik, and observing Kartik Vrata, there's tremendous benefit from following it, but it also is the appearance of Radhakund. So, since it was the appearance of Radhakund, I thought, well, maybe I could speak a little bit about Radhakund. Well, first of all, some personal experience that in the early days when we first went to Vrindavan, not that I was the first, but when it was early on in the 70s, 1970s, and none of us had been to, I don't think at that time, nobody had been to Radhakund. And so the devotees went there and they were thinking, okay, this is the holy place, and they were thinking of it like the Ganges or the Jamuna. And so devotees were leaping off the sides of the bank and doing cannonballs and diving into the waters and, you know, really having water fights and, you know, swimming contests and all kinds of things. Well, at the time, nobody knew that wasn't quite the right approach to Radhakund because of Radhakund's glorious qualities, which we're going to read about soon. But anyway, Prabhupada, when he heard about it, he was furious. And he gave the example that, I think he gave the example of Bhaktisiddhanta. When he went to Radhakund, he just put a few drops from the water on his head. So that sort of brought up everybody short. Later on, there was some more discussion about how to approach Radhakund, which is a holy place beyond compare to any other holy place. So the idea was that if you are going to take a bath in Radhakund, which is recommended in the scriptures, and the Shastra is recommended, then first you should offer some prayers, then put a few drops of water on your head, and if you're going to bathe, you head first, never feet first, never. So now most people know how to approach Radhakund. Mostly it's just recommended to take a few drops on your head and remain very respectful to those waters. There are huge tortoises that live. I don't know how many of you have been there, but there's huge tortoises living there. And sometimes if you do enter those waters, you might get nipped. It happens sometimes. They see some feet and then they go for it. I don't know I don't know exactly how to interpret that, but I don't think they appreciate your presence so much sometimes. The other thing is, on the appearance, a day of Radhakund, I remember we went there once by bus. On the appearance, it was around midnight, and they offer, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe thousands, but at least hundreds, offering lamps to Radhakund and singing. A very divine sort of experience. It was cold, and it was dark, but it was magnificent, wonderful atmosphere. So Radhakund is an extraordinary place. So this, what I'm going to read something of now, I'm not going to try for the Sanskrit. This comes from the Puranas. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur cited 20 verses about a conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna had killed the demon Aristasura. So this describes the origin of Radhakund and Shyamakund, Radha's and Krishna's bathing ponds. And so these verses, 20 verses, it just makes a general reference from the Puranas. So if you ask me for the specifics, I don't have them. But these are the verses that he cited. And I'm going to read them and maybe briefly try to discuss them, although the topic is way over my head. But just some observations, and it'll probably be brief, and there'll be time for questions that I probably can't answer. So here we go. The innocent young gopi said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of the bull. Alas, even though Aristra was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow." This is kind of a strange concept, a male cow. Maybe it's very contemporary, I don't know. So you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritasura. So it appears here, for instance, that the gopis were quite knowledgeable. Not only did they know about Krishna's various pastimes, but they knew about Indra and Vritasura as well. So it's interesting that they make that reference. So in other words, they're speaking according to Shastra. They weren't just bluffing when they challenged Krishna's, you know, behavior in killing this demon, Vritasura. So he says, how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds? So what a challenge. Yeah, visit every holy place in all the three worlds, the entire universe, in other words. So then Krishna made his reply. Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch. With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, this is the water of the Bhagavati River, coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here. When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows. See, all the holy places. I wanted to... I'm not quite sure where to interject this, but this is very interesting, the dealings between Krishna and the gopis and Radharani here, because Krishna appears to be very arrogant in this exchange. He's kind of almost like showing off how tremendous he is, so it seems. And I was thinking how in ordinary friendships, if you have a very dear friend, sometimes the joke, kind of joking interior content of the jokes is out of affection for that person. So sometimes, like, for instance, we'll accuse a good friend of being arrogant or puffed up or ridiculous, or if you have a good enough friend, you can say anything to them. And they'll enjoy it. Even if it's critical, they may enjoy it. So there's a very loving atmosphere going on here. It's all about enjoyment on the transcendental platform. That Krishna and the gopis are, first of all, they're madly in love. Not our kind of madly in love, but they're madly in love. Selflessly madly in love. But here they're having a kind of a critical and joking exchange. So it says here, he says, see all the holy places, right? And so the gopis make a reply. They say, well, we don't see them the way you describe them, meaning that they're offering a doubt. Maybe they're not really the holy places. How do we know? So then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up. I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Dirgika. I am the river Shona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tambraparni. I am the holy place Pushkara. I am the river Saraswati. Then he said, this is the water of the Bhagavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here. Anyway, sorry, I just read that. I forgot to go. Anyway, they've made all these announcements, and then he say, and we are the Godavari, Jamuna, and Rava rivers, and the confluence of rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters. After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant. Now here they're describing Krishna as arrogant. What's wrong with this statement? Govinda? Yeah, he's not arrogant, but he appears to be arrogant because he's having fun. This is the thing that characterizes these exchanges amongst the Vrijvasis. They're having fun. They're having fun falsely accusing each other. They're having fun joking with each other. It's enjoyable. It's all very happy. It's enjoyment. So they're joking, kind of sarcasm and criticism is just a way of increasing Krishna's pleasure. So here, though, he says, this is Krishna's statement, just to agitate them. He says, I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places. Huh? And whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma. So he's challenged. Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows. I must create an even more beautiful pond. So go to work. So what I thought about when I read this, there's hundreds of gopis there, and she's ordering them to dig, to begin digging. Now you think about it. You think of the gopis as being these, you know, beautiful damsels, but they're also village girls, and they know how to work. At least they're playing that part. They may be divine beings, but at the same time, their mood is that of a village girl. So she says, and she is in a position to order them. Just imagine, Radharani didn't say please here. She just says, go to work. Which I thought was pretty interesting. That, having heard these words, the gopis saw that Aristasura's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands, and in this way, a divine pond manifested in the short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with water from mine. Still a little bit, like, condescending. A little bit condescending, right? You can, you know, you've dug this pond. Okay, that's nice, very nice. You can fill it with the water that I've brought here from all over the universe. Here's the response. But Radha replied, no, 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 no. This is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. So they immediately reject his proposal. Your water is contaminated. How could we possibly want that in our kund? I will have my countless gopi companions bring the pure water of the Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own water and thus make its renown unequaled in the entire world. So she's rejecting Krishna's offer. she's rejecting the mood of condescension also. She's dismissing. No. No. Then I will have, so she's going to bring Manasa Ganga to fill her kund. And there will be, this place will be unequaled in the entire world. Then Lord Krishna gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. It doesn't describe exactly who this personality was. But he made a dramatic appearance, something like that. He appeared dramatically. He was representing all the holy places, and he was approaching to Radharani to speak, and he said, that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Bishabhanu, Radharani. Then, with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories. nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them. And thus he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. So he's saying that only Krishna knows how great you are, and so therefore he wants you to not be inconvenienced anyway when it comes to having a bath. He is always anointing your lotus feet with nectarian, charu, and yavaka. Now, I looked up these terms, and the only thing translation is given for charu, as far as I could find, means beautiful or attractive. So he's anointing your lotus feet with nectarian charu. So by his anointing her feet, they become more beautiful, apparently. And the other term, yavaka, I could only find two references, but it doesn't say what it means. So apparently he anoints her feet and makes them even more beautiful. And then it says, and then he decorates them with ankle bells, and he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke of his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our desire bear fruit. So he's making a plea on behalf of all the holy places, all the waters from the holy places, making a plea on their behalf, saying, please, don't turn us away. You know, please do. Please give us, be satisfied with us and give us your mercy. So then Radharani replies, I will come to bathe in your pond. No, sorry, I skipped. Lord Hari then said, my dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are. I think I might have skipped a page, though. Sorry. Well, that's right. So he's making a kind of counter proposal. Please, he's kind of going along with the representative of the holy places and says that your place will be more famous than mine. Like, this Krishna Kund is not going to be as famous as Radha Kund. And I will come here to take my bath and enjoy water pastimes. That this lake will be as dear to me as you are. So he's speaking very charmingly now. No longer arrogantly, apparently arrogantly. And Radha replied, I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons. You may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastise Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me. So Radharani is almost one-upping his humility. She's even more humble, and she's saying, I don't care how many Arista demons you kill. You know, I will still come to bathe in your pond. So then the real feelings are coming out now here. This intense loving exchange, she doesn't mind what he does. She's just having some fun. Being a left-wing gopi, you know, being a little contradictory, that's her kind of exchange with Krishna. That's the fun. It's kind of almost not pretending to have an argument. Having an argument, but it's a loving argument. So she says, again, I'll just repeat that I don't, he says, I will come to bathe in your pond, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons. And in the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastise Aristasura and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me. So, good motivation for having a bath at Radha Kund. That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radha Kund. generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani a brilliant flash of lightning, filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds. So this was Krishna's last pastime in Vrindavan, according to this reference from the 10th canto, that Narada Muni, as soon as he understood that the killing of Aristo was concluded, that's when he went to agitate the mind of Kamsa, that he needed to do something about this Krishna, this dangerous Krishna. So, just a little bit more about Radhakund, that when Lord Chaitanya went to Vrindavan, he was directed to the place where the Radhakund and Shyamakund should be, but they were just two ponds, kind of very reduced looking, in paddy fields, you know, just some rice fields, two little ponds, and he identified them right away. He was asking, where are these places? And they said, well, we don't know. So eventually he discovered these two ponds and he asked that they be renovated. Now, I've read two different accounts of how they were renovated. One is that Rupa and Sanatan Goswami did the renovation, and some other places say it was Raghunath Das who got a big donation from a big landholder who gave the money and organized the construction of the of those places. So I'm not sure, but apparently the final work, the actual construction work, was done by this famous person who had become a disciple of Raghunath Das. So just a couple of other verses. This is from the Adi Lila, fourth chapter. Radhikara prema guru ami shishyanata sada ama nana litye nachaya udbhata. The love of Radhika, this is Krishna speaking, the love of Radhika is my teacher, and I am her dancing pupil. Her prema makes me dance various novel dances. So this is Krishna speaking of his, you could say, almost subordinate position to Radharani. That he's saying, she controls me. She's the one that teaches me how to love. Then this verse, this is from the Madhya Lila. Adi Lila. There's a conversation. Oh, my beloved friend Vrinda, where are you coming from? I am coming from the feet of Sri Hari. Where is he? In the forest on the bank of Radhakund. What is he doing there? He is learning dancing. Well, who is his master? Your image, Radha, revealing itself in every tree and creeper in every direction, is roaming like a skillful dancer, making him dance behind. In other words, wherever he looks, wherever Krishna looks, he sees her. He sees her dancing, and he's trying to imitate it. So this is from the Govinda Lilamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And then there's this verse, and this one is from Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just as Srimati Radharani is most dear to Sri Krishna, her bathing place, Radhakund, is also dear to him. Among all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is supermost and very dear to Lord Krishna. This verse is from the Padma Purana and is included in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Srila Rupa Goswami, and it also appears in other parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in conclusion, or in concluding this, the verse is from the Upadeshamrita. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. superior to Mathura, Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radhakund stands supreme, for it is over flooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? This is always a good kind of question. Where is that intelligent person who is unwilling? So it's a contradictory statement, isn't it? If you're reluctant to serve Radhakund, then it means you're not intelligent. So it's interesting composition, Rupa Goswami. Then in the Shastra it is said that of all types of fruit of workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take the devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her Kund lake is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, aprakrita bhava, render loving service to the divine couple of Sri Sri Radha Govinda who perform their Ashtakaliya Leela, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes? Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radhakund are the most fortunate people in the universe. Well, just one comment. In the old days, a few people, you know, reading these sort of verses, they thought, well, that's it. I'm going to go live in Radhakund. And generally, they didn't last very long. Because it's quite austere. Living at Radhakund can be quite an austere sort of life. And they didn't have the adhikar. They didn't have the qualification, actually, to spend time at Radhakund. Now, a few devotees are still there. And they seem to be doing all right. At least as far as we can tell. But it's not an easy thing to do. It requires some qualification. All the greatest Goswami, Raghunath Das, Krishnadas Kaviraj, so many, Raghunath Bhatta, so many have gone to live there and practice their service there. But they're highly elevated persons. They're Nishkinchana devotees. So I don't recommend it. Visiting, yes. Taking darshan, yes. But living, maybe not. This is the final verse of the Nectar. Of the many objects of favored delight and of all the lovable damsels of Brajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kund is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radhakund is very rarely attained even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. Sounds pretty good. Maybe we'd be that fortunate. So I'm just going to read one other section. This is from the Bhakti Ratnakara. Shyamakund is also known as Aristakund. Whoever bathes in Radhakund and Shyamakund gets the same results one achieves by the performance of a Rajasuya and Ashwamedha Yajna. This is confirmed in the Adi Varaha Purana. Raghava Pandit, who was the one who received Rupa and Sanatana Goswami when they first went to Vrindavan, he said that according to the Puranas, there is no limit to the glories of Radhakund. In the Adi Varaha Purana Mathura Kanda, it is stated that if a devotee of Vishnu offers a lamp to Radha Kund during the month of Kartik, well, since you're all doing that, it's very auspicious. It says, this is from the Adi Varaha Purana, if you do that, if you offer a lamp to Radha Kund during the month of Kartik, he will be able to see the entire universe. I'm not sure what that's, how that's good or how that's a benediction, but apparently it's being able to see the universe is a good thing. I don't know why. But anyway, in Padma Purana, Kartik Mahatmya, it is stated, Radha Kund is very dear to Sri Hari and is situated near Govardhan Hill. By taking a bath in Radha Kund on the eighth day of the waning moon in the month of Kartik, Bahulashtami, so this is the auspicious day, one can greatly please Lord Hari, who enjoys his pastimes there. This Kund is as dear to Krishna as Radha herself. Amongst all the gopis, she is the most dear to Krishna. It is the duty of the devotees to bathe in the Radha Kund during the month of Kartik and thereafter worship Lord Janardana. This simple worship pleases Krishna as much as one does by worshiping Janardana on the day of Uttana Ekadashi. So these are some of the benedictory statements. So I'll stop there. If there are questions, fine. I don't know how much, well, I can answer them, but I'm willing to try. Yes.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I would like to ask a question, if I may.
Go right ahead.
Last night, I read that today Radha Kunda was discovered. It appeared sometimes in Chaitra, March, April, during March or April, around that time. Do you have any information by any chance about that?
You mean what month it was discovered?
In Chaitra. Chaitra month?
Yeah,
March or April.
I don't understand about the... those are months that are designated throughout the the scriptures. Yes? Yeah, I really don't know how to answer that. Because I don't understand the... I guess it's the lunar system. A lunar system, and I'm not quite sure how that works, so sorry. CJ?
You spoke about the arrogance of Krishna at the beginning, and I was looking more for a comment from you to add to it, but this was my realization, was that when that arrogance is played out in ordinary relationships that have here on in this plane, that arrogance can backfire. And so you talked about it being playful, that they really push each other, but at the same time, from what I've understood over my time, is that Radharani and Krishna, being the supreme lovers, they can handle it. But we might run into difficulty, as we often do. And so what's your advice on that, or... What's
okay,
your realization on it?
I think I know what you're getting at. It depends on the nature of the relationship. Like if you have someone that you love, that you have a very loving relationship with, you sometimes feign arrogance. You pretend to be arrogant just to get a rise out of them and enjoy some joking exchanges. So that's one kind of, you could say, ersatz or false arrogance. It's not real arrogance. It's just joking or loving arrogance. On the other hand, in a relationship where there is not so much intimacy, arrogance may create conflict. So if you are going to pretend to be arrogant and the other person is not going to know that you're pretending, then that's a mistake. That can be hurtful also. So you have to be very careful in who you reveal your inner heart to. You know, in association, we have respect for all devotees, but we have to be a little more careful about who we associate with and how we associate with them. Like, for instance, you and I have a relationship, and I can say all kinds of outrageous things to you, and you're not disturbed by it. And you can say sometimes some pretty outrageous things yourself. So But I understand, and we have an affection. So when Radha and Krishna are exchanging like this, that's their enjoyment. They understand each other completely. But they go through various kinds of exchanges where they're just joking or laughing or pretending to be angry, you know, and neither one of them, you know, is affected in any kind of mundane way. It's a totally transcendental exchange. I hope that's okay. Okay. Somebody over here, okay, go ahead. Hold it. Wait for the...
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the wonderful class. I was wondering, I don't know if I missed it. I've always wondered, how do we serve Radha Kund? You know, that's the highest thing we could do, but what can we do?
What can you do?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question. How can we serve? Well, if you go there, you can serve it just by offering prayers, by glorifying Radha Kund, mm-hmm. Aspiring to praying to be allowed to enter into these divine pastimes. Those are ways to serve. Or you can actually do some practical service, like perhaps, maybe suppose there's a, you know, there's some way that something needs to be repaired there. You might be able to finance, the repair. That would be a practical way of serving. Otherwise, I think it's mainly praying and trying to be useful as a devotee day to day. Anything else? Somebody had another
Thank
hand
you.
Up over here.
Actually, to be honest, I had a similar question. What does it mean to us as a practicing Vaishnavas to actually serve Radha Kund? Because physically, it's not always possible. So what is the mood? Like, if we can explain the mood
of
Radha Kund.
Well, I think you have to see it as a state of consciousness. Radha Kund is also a state of consciousness. And what is the mood? What is that mood? The mood is a selfless service, selfless offer of service, or selfless service itself. In other words, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness and you're aspiring to advance in Krishna consciousness, that to me, that is... Because it's like the pinnacle. Radha Kund is like the pinnacle of Radha Krishna's loving exchanges. So you want to enter into that realm. You could call it a realm of consciousness, if you like. And if we're aspiring to enter that realm of exchange, then that's service. I mean, it's of course you could say that it's self-centered, but at the same time, it's what Krishna wants. That we should enter into that higher state of awareness. So I don't know. I can't say much more than that. Maybe someone else will contribute. Govinda would like to say something.
No,
about
I don't.
This.
I have nothing to say.
Go ahead, take it. Say something.
All I can think of is tadiyanam samarchanam. Worship of the things in connection with Krishna are more pleasing to Krishna than worship of Krishna directly. So, but we have Bhaktisiddhanta Swami. He was renovating Radha Kund for many years. So that's one service. It was all been excavated. So it's nice. Dham Seva.
Yeah, I think so. It can be practical, not just offering prayers and aspiring, but you know, it can be a practical thing that you do something. What are the examples? They give this example. I think Keshav Maharaj gave this example that in the spiritual world, they're sweeping the floors even though there's no dust. So this mood of service, as it reaches its height in the pastimes that took place at Radha Kund. So we want to aspire to that level of selfless activity in Krishna consciousness. I would like to do one final thing. I don't know if this is going to be visible, very visible, but This is a plug for something that I've just recently written. It's just been published. It's about Gaurkishore and Jagannath Das Babaji. And you can see it maybe. It's called Babaji Maharaj. It's a book that, it's the most complete book, as far as I know, that's been written about these two personalities. Babaji Maharaj, Two Beyond Duality. And it is, I'm being shameless, I know, but it's available on Amazon, if anybody's interested. Babaji Maharaj, it's called, Two Beyond Duality. Huh? It's about 2.5 times more. I wrote the original one. This is the expansion. I wrote the original one 33 years ago. This is an expansion. I know that it's a little outrageous to promote a book, but anyway, it's a useful book. I think it's a useful book. If you're interested in the lives of the Acharyas, this is a good book. Okay, that's it. Any other questions?